Ryan Fletcher.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to episode 5 of Below the Fold.
Thanks for having me.
How's your afternoon going?
Not too bad. It's still early in the week. It's only Tuesday, so we don't know how the week's going to end.
All right. That's positive.
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce yourself? Let's start with that.
Yeah. So my name is Ryan Fletcher. I work for Initiative MENA in the region, and I look after digital data and technology.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Quite a mouthful.
Yeah, yeah. Many hats, like any other agency person, many hats.
Fantastic.
Many different roles, yeah.
And let's dive straight into it. How do you feel we're doing as an industry when it comes to performance marketing, data analytics?
It's an interesting time, I think. This region in specific, over the last kind of couple of years, has taken a much stronger view on data. And I've been in the region for about 5 years, and I think I've really seen that step up a lot more. Agencies are all trying to find their proposition properly in market.
Constantly evolving, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there's a dichotomy of positions, right? There are certain clients and agencies that are waiting for the perfect solution, and they're hesitant to jump in until they've got it. And there are other companies that are just seeing what happens, taking any available data they have today, applying it, seeing what decisions can be made, and moving from there, iterating as they go, right? Which I think is the best approach. I don't think there is a one solution or the perfect solution to particularly for data.
Right.
It's about taking what you have, learning and then going again. So iterating as you see.
Yeah. I think it's also about moving at the same speed or velocity as your client and what the client needs. There are times where the challenge is pretty fairly straightforward. You just need to, for example, raise awareness for a specific product or a particular service. You don't really need to invest so much behind data, let's say.
So it's interesting you say that, because I think that's one of the major changes of our industry, right? Is when people say performance, their brains immediately go to like sales, revenue, and ROI.
Yeah.
When in reality, at least in the span of my career, I've watched it all become performance, right? No client's ever gonna ask you, here's some money for TV and I don't care what happens with it. You're still optimizing the effectiveness of that media spend to an objective and a KPI. And just the amount of data we have to measure the effectiveness has grown exponentially over the last 10 years. We can get a bit data blind as an agency. We can get lost in our own source.
Yeah, is that what they call it then, analysis paralysis?
I think fundamentally our industry hasn't really shifted in terms of what its goal is for decades. We want people to feel desire. We want people to feel a certain association to a brand or a product. And so the general premise on the framework of our industry hasn't changed. But what has changed is the plethora of data points and our understanding of consumers, our understanding of the modes and mediums that they use every day. That's changed. So it was obvious, it was probably simpler beforehand. But now we've got so many decisions to make and so many data points to analyze that I think sometimes you end up in this paralysis state where you don't know what the next move should be. It's a tough job.
Fair enough. Would you say that AI can help with this massive amounts of data for you to make more agile decisions? Could you maybe state a few examples if you have any?
Yeah, undoubtedly. Across the core building blocks of what we do as an industry, there's applications, valuable applications of AI in terms of what we do. So from a performance lens, contextualization of performance is probably the area that I'm most excited about. So when we turn on a campaign, it will perform to a certain level. And then we might not do another piece of activity for a couple of months, and we turn it on again, and it didn't perform to that level. As an agency, as clients, we immediately look inwards. We look at the creative, we look at the budget, we look at our activations, when in reality, there are a lot of external factors that are happening in the world every day that are going to dramatically change the performance of your business. I was talking to a client this week who are in the travel and tourism industry, right? And oil prices directly impact the price of the seat of actually traveling, or currency shifts between your source market and your target market are going to change the propensity of a user's kind of likelihood to travel to that particular market.
Yeah.
That isn't necessarily something that an agency has at their fingertips mm-hmm. in order to contextualize performance for their clients. Whereas AI, given the right parameters and the right prompting, will be able to give you a much more rounded view, right? Yeah. Outside of all of the typical use cases everyone talks about with AI, which is content creation and these sorts of things.
Yeah, I guess it's one thing also to be able to generate those insights or come across such insights. But it's also another one, another challenge is to also make sure that these insights are available in real time so that you're able to take action on the spot. And I think this is perhaps where tech, MarTech, and also hopefully AI as well, is able to stitch all these data sources together and is able to provide that data in a timely manner so that you're able to take action. Otherwise, what's the point of coming across an insight that's from 6 months ago exactly. and then applying it when it's too late?
And the ability to accurately predict based on historical trends, I think, is becoming an area as an industry we're getting much better at. And that's really, we've always relied on, I would say, a framework to talk to clients about how much they should be spending and where they should be spending their money. And typically, again, it's an inward look at historical data. But being able to pull in all of these external factors, these economic factors, consumer understanding, and then being able to go back to a business and say, you know what, this is your outlook in terms of overall demand, and therefore this is what we feel like we can chase for you from a performance point of view, it is getting more and more interesting, really more and more interesting.
Yeah, so speaking of data and data-driven decision-making, so data-driven decision-making is not something new, right?
No.
It's been here for decades, maybe.
Yeah.
How would you say this has changed perhaps in recent years?
I think there's a lot more value on it. I particularly see that in more creative conversations than I do in the quote unquote performance environment, right? Because that has primarily always been around data and performance and go hand in hand. But when we talk about comms design and when we talk about creative messaging, I think there's a lot more science involved and data involved today than I've seen over the last 5 years. The understanding of color palettes, tones, messages, CTAs, and the impact that's going to actually have on your end goal seems to be, again, exponentially increasing. The level of conversation we have about button sizes and what it's going to say at different levels of the consumer journey are definitely, even our clients are taking that a lot more seriously than they did before.
Yeah, so not just paid ads, but also owned assets, the entire journey.
The entire thing, right? Because it's cliche to say, but it's very true. The funnel is not just dead. It's dead and buried for a long time. At Initiative, we talk about fame and flow. So how do you make a brand grow? There's kind of two core aspects of making a brand grow. First off, it needs to be famous, right? And it needs to be known and associated to the product and industry you're trying to grow against. But the flow state needs to be there. And that's basically about seamless customer experience. And AI today is taking us a long way to create that flow state. But in reality, there's still a lot of unbiased decisions that it doesn't see. So we leave this podcast today, you drive back and you see an outdoor ad and that triggers you to make a search. Okay. That interaction that you've had with that outdoor ad isn't necessarily made available to the algorithms and the AI models that we have today. It's that balance of making sure that when I want to buy from your brand, not only are you there for me to purchase from, but you make that transaction or that action as seamless as possible. And those two things in combination is what really makes a brand grow.
Yeah, just retail utility and right. accessibility.
Shelf space. You go back 50 years and what increased volume of sales for a brand It was taking the key eye-level places in a supermarket, being at the right place so that as you walk down the aisle, it was there. That premise is very easily translated into digital marketing today. If I type something into Google, where's the eyeline space? The eyeline space is number one.
Right.
So take it. Be there, especially when somebody wants to do something with your brand.
So let's talk a little bit more about data and data providers. Do you feel like there's enough, or there are enough data providers, or there's enough data for marketeers here in the region? Because I feel like when you look at markets abroad, I feel like the region is trailing a little bit behind when it comes to what external data is available for marketeers. That's, well, quality data, or deterministic or high probability, at least, data. Or maybe we don't need data. Maybe there's enough to do with your own first party data. There's enough to do with partners and other stakeholders in order to move the needle. Of course, I'm talking about tech data vendors, the Otames, the Oracles, etc.
I'm in two minds about the situation, to be honest with you, because I think there is enough data in the market today to build any kind of insight or enrichment task that you're after. The problem that we have in the region is that it's not as centralized as other markets, right? So you go to the UK and there are specific data brokers and associates that you can go and almost get everything you need from them in one place. Here we have a bit more of a decentralized ecosystem, and you've got to have two things in play. You've got to be able to just first have the architecture and technology in order to sew that and fuse that data together. And you've got to have a bit of a mindset to say, I'm not going to have the perfect picture, but this, it's going to be directional at best, and rely on everything else about your business to make whether you've got the right decision or not.
And also, what's the use of data if you're not going to use it, right? If you're not going to tailor your communication and maybe personalize it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe as a performance person, I shouldn't be harboring on this point too strong, but like, I look at the brands across the world today that are dominating their industry. And then when you get to know their kind of marketing approach, they haven't really shifted the needle too much. They're still looking at reach penetration and at a 1+, 2+, 3+ frequency, right? And all they've done is taken that very core essence of what they've done and sprinkled on top some personalization. They've sprinkled on top something below the line to allow their onboarding process or their cross sell or everything else to grow. But the traditional marketing campaign is, here's my target audience. I understand who they are. I want to reach 70% of them, and I want my cumulative frequency to be 5. So data is useful up to a point where
it's counterproductive.
It becomes a more of a business cost and a sunken cost to your business. I look at some kind of small to medium-sized businesses and say to them, you really want to spend X amount on this piece of MarTech?
Yeah.
And then you need a data warehousing solution. And then you need to understand, you build a license in order to fuse the data. How much revenue do you think you're really going to get from this? Because my ROAS from that might be challenging to get for you, where in reality, there are easier ways for us to get this information or move the needle for you without the need of all this sophisticated technology.
Yeah, data or even MarTech or like a sophisticated tech stack. If you're an e-commerce brand and you have 30 SKUs, you don't need Marketo.
Yeah. Let's drop the CDP, guys. Don't need it.
Yeah. Unless you're better off putting that money on like creative and reach builders.
This is what I think the agency is responsible for doing, is especially how cloud computing over the last 10 years has really become accessible for everyone. You can build 60% of the functionality of a CDP for fractions of the cost using cloud computing, right? Do I have the unbiased machine learning algorithm for 10,000 SKUs? No, I don't. But being able to understand all of your audience data, your media data, and build you a propensity model for someone who's most likely to convert, that's going to cost you about $1,000. that's the beauty of cloud computing, right? And if it doesn't work, we shut it down and we try again somewhere else. Whereas you're not locked into a 12-month license that you're struggling to find a use case for or even show the business value back in your business. Because everyone, someone somewhere is going to say, you spent $100,000 on this. Where's my 2x return? And you'll be scrambling around forever. So I think CMOs are in a wonderful place today. They don't have to necessarily be locked into IT licenses where they're forced to do something. They can be much more agile in market because of these kind of modular solutions that are out for them.
Can you tell us a little bit more? I think it's an interesting topic. So cloud computing. So what are some of the requirements or maybe perhaps data sources or stakeholders that you need to mobilize in order to make sure it's effective? And what are some recommended platforms? Are we talking about BigQuery, LiveRamp?
Yeah, these? The general premise of cloud computing is that it expands and contracts based on your demand. So gone away are the expensive hardware server costs that are there. No matter how much you're going to use it, there's a running cost. For brands today, it kind of grows with you. It grows with your business. In terms of, there are AWS, Google Cloud, these are the market leading, and Azure. Those are the three market leading places. In terms of getting going with a cloud computing solution, you don't need much, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. When we work with clients, we build it from the very beginning inside their environment. Okay, so we do away with the long, lengthy conversations with the DPO about privacy and compliance and everything else. We just build it directly inside your environment.
Right. Okay, so on the client's premise.
On the client's premise, yeah. So that there isn't ever a conversation about, does this data belong to us? Are we a processor? And it's use case driven. And I think I'm going to shout out Google now, but Google give you $300 credit from just to get going.
They definitely need a shout out.
So I'm a big fan of GCP. Sorry, Amazon, but I'm a big fan of GCP. But it gives you $300 credit just to sign up. And if you're going to get started with BigQuery, which is just a database in the sky, right? Spending that $300 is quite a hard task in terms of ingesting the data and analyzing it. You would have to go some in terms of the data that you put in there and how many queries you were writing to actually spend that $300. We use it a lot internally because when agencies sell time, time is the coefficient to profit. So if somebody is spending 3 hours doing something in Excel that I can get 5 minutes done out of BigQuery, then that makes that whole process more profitable for us as an agency. So I'm a big, you know this, I'm a massive advocate for these solutions. Anybody, client, agency side, investigate if you don't haven't already and implement.
Great. So let's switch topics. Maybe talk about something a little bit more traditional.
Yeah.
All right, maybe a little bit more mechanic. Optimization strategies in particular. It's up to you if you want to talk about a particular platform. But I think, you know, some of the practices are applicable across or are recurring across several platforms. What would you say are some optimization strategies that have been working more lately? I think we both worked together, just FYI for the listeners and viewers out there, and we both have a level of understanding and alignment on what has worked for our clients in the past. But I'd love to get your input on maybe some successful optimizing strategies without having to name brands or clients.
Yeah.
Are there times where optimizing an impression works for conversion? Or would you say that there are times where even though you're aiming to generate conversions, that bidding for a conversion isn't the right approach? You would need to take a step back and maybe look at other optimization strategies or bidding strategies?
Almost always.
Yeah.
Almost always. How do I put this nicely?
Don't put it nicely.
Okay.
I'll solve it for you.
I think that the algorithms today are biased.
Yeah.
You know, the majority of the platforms aren't necessarily building products for the head of performance at an agency.
Yeah.
They're building products for SMBs in order to make a seamless onboarding process for them, because there's more scale, there's many more advertisers for them to go after. And there is undoubtedly a yield element to their optimizations and automated bidding strategies. I believe that a lot of the clients, or a lot of the stuff I tend to do, is actually removing those.
Yeah.
And showcase, I have almost one a month where I talk to clients about how this automated bidding strategy isn't necessarily doing what you think it's doing. And there's a balance to everything, right? I wouldn't say that everyone shouldn't be using them. I think that there are just situations, for example, where, like you mentioned, I'm going to talk about search, for example, brand search is an important one. Why would I let any machine make a decision on when to serve an impression for my brand? It doesn't take into consideration all of the other efforts that I'm doing with all of my other channels. It's just looking in a siloed view. I want to control that. Now, depending who I am in my vertical and who I am in my industry, maybe I want to implement an automated bidding strategy for my generic strategy. Maybe I do. If I'm price competitive and I have a decent position in market, maybe I do. If not, I'd rather make the decisions for my client myself, because I'm unbiased in the situation, right? I'm looking purely from a data point of view. The amount that I spend per click has no implication on my bottom line, other than I have to go and talk about the performance at the end of the month. The same can't be said for the tech platforms in the region, right? I see a lot of a concerted effort across the industry to almost remove my ability to understand and analyze data in a meaningful way. I don't want to turn on broad keywords. I want to keep my ability to change bids at a certain point in time based on the data.
Right.
I don't want to move to automated bidding. And you're not only just being recommended to do that, you're actually being penalized if you don't. Now. Yeah. So there's, and I'm okay with it being, guys, this is our recommendation. But to remove my specialism from the equation, which is fundamentally how I feel, is an interesting time. We're not necessarily always aligned now. I felt like we were before, and with kind of major tech platforms, for example, there's a big difference in terms of how we approach growing a brand nowadays.
Let me challenge you on this. Let's go into a specific example. Mm. You know how when we want to optimize a campaign, we may look at specific segments, or we may look to target signals or moments, or I don't know, keywords or audiences, etc., in order to get our ads across to a relevant user or at the relevant moment in order to hopefully generate a sale or a conversion. Wouldn't you say that it would be better to leave it up to the algorithm or AI or the AI in order to read these massive amounts of data and data points and signals and let the platform decide when is the right moment for the user to convert? Because you would expect that there's a lot that goes into the platform, that there are a lot of signals and data points that us humans will never possibly be able to read all that data in such a quick manner. So there are times where I guess there are scenarios where you need some automation. You need to put the campaign on autopilot in order to have the freedom to read all that amount of data and make a decision on when a user is likely to convert based on the signals.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that in premise, but my biggest issue with that is the transparency associated to it. So undoubtedly, the AI can, we see a lot of solutions in market, right, that can essentially spot these micro trends. Not only is somebody searching for something that's obvious to the product I'm trying to sell, but they typically have over-indexing in this interest and this interest. No problem. I understand that. But show me how much potential volume is inside that particular segment. Let me still understand today how to flex the system. Maybe I want to push it more. Maybe I feel like there is something in there, but it's all becoming a bit of a worrying black box for me, mm-hmm. especially when there are vast amounts of money being invested at the same time. It becomes really difficult for me as the consultant for a client to work out what's next. We're going back 18 years when I started in this industry. The general premise of performance hasn't changed. Granularity and control. I remember it clear as day, setting up paid search accounts whenever it was. You wanted to break things out as granular as possible so that I could control my investment. And also when the client asked me a difficult question, I knew I could isolate and give you that answer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those general concepts are starting to fade away because you want me to turn on PMAX and you want me to turn on Advantage Plus, and the reporting and everything else out of it doesn't give me the granularity. And even if it did give me the granularity, there's nothing I can really do about it.
Yeah.
So UAC was the first part of that. You know, I want to generate installs. Here's this wonderful product. And then my client says to me, oh, we see that search is working really well as part of UAC. And I'm like,
Yeah.
What can you do? You know, maybe spend more. Maybe you'll show up more.
And yeah.
It's difficult. So I agree with you that the AI itself is very, very intelligent. And obviously it's unlocking a lot of growth.
Yeah.
But there still needs to be the levers for us to tweak it.
There's a lot that you can generate from the platform if you go granular that you can utilize across other channels. And I feel like, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels Performance Max is working, it's delivering budgets, it's spending the budget and it's delivering results. But that's it.
What do we do next? From there, I just put more budget in it. We as agencies should never go into our clients and say, we know exactly what your solution is, right? We should be going in and saying, listen, directionally, based on your goals, our understanding of your business, and also our expertise in market, we think that we should be activating these things, okay? But then over time, what we're going to do is refine them and almost mold them to your business and your model, right? Because lead times are different, price points are different, all of that contextual stuff I spoke about before. So when you remove that element and I put PMAX on a plan, and the way I've bought PMAX month one and the way I've bought it in month nine are the same, apart from some sort of arbitrary above average, below average scoring system that I just don't understand. There's no context around it. That's, you're putting us in a weird position. You should be able to give us the levers to say, it was this particular image and it was this particular text that really drove the majority of the conversions in this environment. Thank you so much. I will spend more on that environment.
It almost feels like it's taking the agency's job.
Yes. Right?
And to be fair, you will have, I guess, there are definitely clients out there and brands that wouldn't care so much to invest time to understand what worked, what hasn't worked. I don't care who scored the goal as long as you scored the goal, right? And it works for them. The less I know, the more, the better.
Ignorance is bliss.
Exactly. If you have a product that's going to deliver results for me, it's going to spend the budget, and that's fine with me.
But agencies have to elevate, right? This is only a directional insight. These things aren't going to slow down. So fighting about how effectively you can press the buttons in a platform, you're going to lose that battle. What agencies should be doing is focusing on the walled gardens today and producing a holistic picture for their clients to understand how they're going to move forward, right?
Yeah.
Marketing mix modeling is wonderful maths, right? We know it's flawed, but that's what makes it so endearing. And it's still something today that I believe is truly undervalued in our industry. If done well, it isn't just about the sales and revenue internally in your business and the effectiveness of your marketing channel. It will quantify for you the competition, the price elasticity, all of these other elements of your industry, and give you a route to market regardless of the walled gardens that sit in front of you. And then as an agency, you then go to battle inside those individual silos. So you have to fight the Metas and the Googles to get the performance.
So I want to talk a little bit more about cross-channel integration, because you did mention walled gardens.
Yeah.
And also, I also want to talk about market media mix modeling, which is also another topic that we could tap into. But on cross-channel integration first, what is there to do for marketeers to address that point? Because let's admit it, like, the tech platforms are never gonna talk to each other.
Never.
There's always gonna be this, how should we call it, this like drama.
Yeah, it's their value, isn't it? The value of Meta today is the data that Meta possess. There's no way they're gonna shake hands with anybody. Yeah. And not only now, you've got the platforms building their fortresses, you've also got operating systems. So you've got this kind of vertical splice as well, with iOS across each of those platforms not sharing data even with the platform. Yeah. So you've got this kind of
fragmentation.
Yeah, guesswork, right? I think the best thing for clients to really understand today is generate a baseline. Right, so use data science to generate a baseline about your business, right? And really understand where you are today from a maturity point of view and your penetration in market and everything else. And then move to a scenario pretty quickly there where you understand the coefficients between not only individual channels, so how effective search is to driving conversions on my website, but how effective is search and social in combination with one another in order to generate uplift, right? It's the predecessor to modeling. Mm. Modeling is the final answer to that, which is how do I best invest my money?
Yeah.
But I think there are already correlation and characteristics between channels that clients should understand in relative to their business, because it is different. Industry level or category trends are one thing, but your position inside that category will dramatically impact the different type of channels that you're trying to go after. Your segments and your audiences for your particular brand will influence those things too.
I feel like it's far from achieving its full potential. Today it takes years of data, takes a lot of input, and it takes time to generate the report.
AI is helping a lot with that.
Like, yeah.
AI is helping an awful lot with that. I use it almost every time I'm about to start a project with a client. Just even in the initial scoping period, right, having a 10-minute conversation with ChatGPT about all of the various economic factors that influence that category, some of them I haven't even thought about. And then I go, actually, I want the dynamic stock price of these two companies at the same time, and give me those and map those out. And the computational power of MMMs is getting faster and faster. Mm-hmm. So cloud computing is really helping us deliver that in a faster manner. The problem is actually us, because the buying dynamics of media is so complicated, particularly those traditional channels, that it becomes a little nuanced at the end. So understanding the linear performance of digital is not a problem. And then you have to then sustenance heavy up and normal GRPs inside of a market, particularly here where there's lots of spillover and efficiencies across market. It becomes a little bit more finger in air moment, like what is actually happening. But if any client today hears this and doesn't have any model, it should be day one, right? Because at least it will give you that direction.
And so, speaking of, I guess you mentioned cloud computing to use it for an AI and technology. So speaking of marketing technology or MarTech and tech stack, what do you feel is the best tech stack today? What tech platforms would you stack together?
If I had a magic wand, what would I stick together?
Yeah.
A lot of it would be GCP. Because from a analysis and kind of data science point of view, GCP is there. And it obviously has native integrations with channels like Google, which are wonderful.
Yeah.
On top of that, building my webs, if let's say I had a website, I would definitely take Sitecore.
Yeah.
Because of the deep level of personalization that Sitecore can deliver. There is a big drop off in terms of CX experience based on these technologies. Sitecore is by and far the best one. And Salesforce, Mm-hmm. Right? I would keep it simple.
Honestly. Never fails. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would keep it simple because the investment sometimes, or most of the time, isn't going to outweigh the return. I like Salesforce, for example, because I can map it against my onboarding experience and my aftercare and everything else in my business. I like Sitecore because it couldn't deliver one-to-one personal experiences for me and you. And I like GCP because it's malleable. Whatever I need it to do at this point in time, whether it be design new segments out of Salesforce to generate personalized experiences on the web and calculate lifetime value and move it back into my platform to bid against, it can do all of those things for me.
And when you say GCP, obviously you mean the entire Google marketing platform, right?
Yeah, Google stack today is head and shoulders above the rest of the stacks.
Yeah, quite comprehensive too, right?
Very comprehensive. And honestly, I've got nothing against Adobe Stack. I think Adobe Stack is very good. It requires a lot of work to get Adobe up and running in my experience. Whereas Google can be plug and play in that kind of situation. And then being able to press a button and that shows up in Google Ads for me to buy ads against is unrivaled.
Really. Yeah. Campaign Manager, GA4. Yeah,
everything from Google Tag Manager to GA4 to GNP, like DV360, and then Google Cloud on top of that, BigQuery, all of that stuff. It's literally a one-stop shop. And Search, they're not paying me to say that. I wish they were, you know that?
No, it's pretty. Yeah. But like I said earlier, they need your shout out, right? Yeah. I'm being sarcastic. No, like they need your...
The check's in the post, I'm
sure. Awesome. We still have a bit of time, and I do want to, I guess, talk about this topic, which is interesting. And I feel like I don't think enough people in our industry are really talking about it, which is blockchain and in marketing or in performance marketing. Mm. Performance marketing, it's almost the same thing to a certain extent. Yeah. No offense. Are we using blockchain in marketing? Has anyone been using blockchain in marketing or utilizing blockchain technology in marketing? Any particular examples of usage of blockchain?
I know all but one, right? I know of a company called Aquilis that are using blockchain to solve ad fraud solutions in marketing. Listen, I'm a big fan of blockchain technology for various reasons, and I think that not only just marketing but society wide is going to see these kind of ledger based perfect systems come to market, right? Whether it be retail or real estate ownership, all the way through to tokenization of various different assets. In marketing specifically, there is this elephant in the room all the time, which is how many of my impressions are real, you know?
And who decides if they're real? And I think that's where blockchain could play a role, right?
100%. I think it's a difficult system. You can see how the two pieces of technology could integrate at the SSP level in order for us to essentially map every single inventory source that SSP had available, and then essentially similar to every advertiser being a wallet on a blockchain, shifting out the ownership of that impression at that point in time and printing on a ledger for us to audit again would be wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Because one of the things that our industry doesn't do very well is share a voice in digital, right? Mm-hmm. It's this holy grail answer that I don't think any of us have a way to answer today, because there is this big black hole called impressions that we just don't know. So I can see blockchain not only solving the fraudulent aspects of our market, but maybe actually giving us an accurate measurement on share of voice, which would be wonderful, particularly for those kind of FMCG brands that really want to dominate and look at those metrics implicitly.
That I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think there's a lot that could be utilized in brand safety and fraud prevention. Also, I think in data monetization on a user level, right? Maybe I'm much more comfortable sharing my data on a decentralized network tech, and in exchange I earn me some, I don't know, tokens or money or right. digital money.
We've seen those use cases, whether you're running, jogging, doing something, you're earning on the chain.
Yeah, yeah.
Why can't that be being served ads? Of course it can be. And to your second point, not only just about the actual inventory fraud monetization, it's not just blockchain technology. I'd like to shout out telcos
yeah.
in this part, globally, honestly.
Yeah.
Because when you implement a telco in the middle of that transaction, so I would almost, in an ideal scenario, I would create the chain on an SSP level and let the telco be the intermediary in that, because they validate the human response, the digital transaction, if you like, and that would then ultimately remove a lot of that fraudulent activity that's sitting inside of our industry today that we just don't know where it is. We know it exists, and we try our best with viewability and verification tools to cut away as much as we possibly can, but it's an innovative part of our industry, right? They find new ways to game the system, and I feel like the only way that you can stop the gamification is ID. It's a very mm-hmm. sensitive topic. No one wants to put their passport into their social media,
yeah.
but ultimately it would be for the benefit of everyone, I believe, that to bring that level of verification into the market.
Right. What are, do you feel, are future like trends or innovations? Or let me rephrase that. Where are we heading?
Where are we heading? I think we've just touched on a big part of it. There's going to be a new currency across our ecosystem in digital today.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the cookie at some point will deprecate. Who knows when? But it's definitely defunct technology today. We need with the things like blockchains and digital IDs and people talking about device ID, there needs to be a new currency that we trade on, particularly in the digital market. So that's one. The second massive is almost we're going to go back to some marketing principles, I think. I can say this because all I've ever done is work at agencies, but we love to make things complicated. Conversations about attention. I'm sorry, guys. If you tell me that 40% of my ads people have paid attention to them, I'm worried about the 60% that you're telling me that they didn't pay attention yeah. to them. And I think agencies are constantly looking for ways to make things exciting. Like,
true.
How do we, on one-to-one level, we're going to serve these ads? And guys, the basic premises of marketing are still the same. Like, yeah. Sure, humans, we've changed how we interact with technology, how we integrate with TV, for example. It's changed massively over the last 60 years. But our emotional reasoning, which is still what we do every day, right? Our emotional reasoning and our association mechanics in our brain has stayed relatively the same.
Yeah.
It's just we're overloaded with information. So I'd like to see a rebalancing. I'd like to see a rebalancing in the market where we can... Still, if anyone hasn't read like Les Bennett, Peter Field, The Long and Short of It, Byron Sharp, How Brands Grow, these sorts of things, read them and then apply to what you know in the digital ecosystem. There is a happy medium between those two. And then I think that's what the future of our marketing industry is.
Yeah, sometimes it's just simply about who knows your brand, who knows about you, who knows your brand, who's aware of your brand, who prefers your brand over this other brand, how many people are buying your product or using your services, and that's it.
And one of the things that just stuck with me when I read Byron Sharp particularly is, like I said, a lot of clients want to talk about personalization with me. They want to talk about cross-sell, upsell. But Byron Sharp tells you, or basically shows you, that the people who buy regularly from your brand represent a tiny proportion of your potential audience, right? So advertisers are spending so much money talking to people who were probably going to buy from you anyway. Whereas in reality, brands really grow when you shift consumers who don't know who you are or only never purchased from you to go into purchase once, because the size of that pie is massive.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, like I said, the big CPG brands and FMCG, they get, this is their life, right? They totally get that. But I feel like everyone else has been led down a rabbit hole that sometimes we need to just pull them back and say, guys, be famous, right? And there's clever ways to become famous, but let's not run down this remarketing hole because we'll never get out of it.
Okay, great input, honestly. One final question is, give me the most epic, successful, but most epic performance marketing case study that you came across.
The one that comes to mind that I'm incredibly proud of is working with a travel and tourism brand. We basically worked with them to understand that impressions are king. You're combating a very competitive market with OTAs at your door and everything else. And the solution we came up with wasn't really even to do with performance marketing that much. It was their operating model. We kind of introduced to them a way for them to, so they, I told them, don't fight booking.com, become booking.com.
Yeah.
So rather than comparing yourself in terms of revenue, you've already got an OTA aggregator site, but just for your hotels in specific, right? So just charge them a third of what the booking.com would charge them.
Yeah.
And what you'll do is you'll unlock budgets to ensure that you have 100% impression share, and we get generate every single impression in remarketing and never have to ask the hotels for budget again. So that's the one I'm proud of the most, because not only did it have performance elements to it, and we used data science to work out and prove to them that the automated bidding strategies weren't working.
Yeah.
And we had to go back to basics. But also the solution wasn't about just marketing. The solution was a commercial problem that we came with an innovative way to solve it for them. And there, once they implemented it, you know, their marketing budget grew and grew and grew, and so did the revenue of their business, right? And they could fend off the wolves at the door,
right,
in a profitable way.
Yeah, so basically offer a better product or service and suddenly your impression becomes much more compelling, much more efficient than
any other thing. Sometimes be ready to understand that the limitations of your marketing budget aren't necessarily the budget itself. Internally, the way that they generated revenue off their website was looked at as revenue, but the revenue that they were generating from an OTA was looked at as cost.
Yeah.
And when we said, that's not right, that's not fair, both of them should either be looked at as revenue or both of them should be looked at as costs.
Yeah.
And once we did that for them and showed them a way out of the solution or the situation they were in, it became, it just unlocked years worth of growth for them.
Amazing. I love it. I love this case study. Awesome. Do we have time for more? A little bit more? 5 minutes? Okay. I'll let you choose the final topic if you like.
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead. Right. Yes.
Because
you're the first guest.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question.
That turns the table and asks me a question.
Pressure's on you now. No, I mean, like you mentioned, we've already worked together, right? We've worked together for not as long as I would have liked, honestly. But what's your view, right? Like, I feel like the creative and media are blending and driven by AI, right? They're blending into the same world. So what's your position? What does the agency look like 2 years from now?
I think it's fundamental that agencies constantly change and constantly embrace the change that is happening with technology. I think we're going to become much better with AI. We're going to become much more efficient in delivering basic tasks to more complex tasks. I already see it, honestly, Ryan, at work. I already see quite a handful of people use AI in their day-to-day. And I'm sure you see the same your end. I think also, just to wrap up that question, is that we're going to be probably in the next 2 years using that tech development or the recent tech developments in retail media or in AI to just do the basics better, just deliver better marketing, as opposed to scrambling to deliver innovation to our clients, which is sometimes meaningless, like you said. Like, it's not always about new media or a new media opportunity or a new type of rich media experience.
Exciting
or a special
stuff,
execution.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes it's about bringing in more data and just delivering better growth and better yield or uplift in performance. And I think that's where probably we're going to be headed to in the next 2 years.
The way I see it, the barrier to entry is going to lower. Executing a wonderful media strategy with a best-in-class creative approach today is an expensive task.
Yeah.
Because there's all of these people and everything else and production costs and everything. I can see the ceiling raise and the floor raise with it, with AI. So the barrier of entry for an advertiser to go and get that holistic view from one agency is going to be much cheaper than it ever was before. And that's exciting for us.
Exciting for us, exciting for advertisers.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah.
Oh, great news for advertisers.
Yeah, you're welcome, guys.
stay in the industry, folks.
No, you're welcome.
Fantastic. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Likewise.
And I feel like I could get more of you, hopefully maybe some other time.
I'll be back for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back.
Congratulations, by the way, as well. Yeah. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah.
What an amazing show.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan first.
Yeah.
So thank you for the invite.
Thank you, I appreciate it.